ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelas, host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news. Every week you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Ritual humiliation at which everybody laughs and pretends to be entertained by Donald Trump. That's on the Trump bingo card.
So join me for Politics Now on the ABC Listen app.
Hi, it's Andy here. Keep a close eye on our feed this week. We're releasing episodes at different times than usual to bring you what you need to know about the Bondi terror attack as we have it. Who could do such a thing? That's the question Australians are asking after Sunday's mass shooting at Bondi Beach, killing 15 people. How did they radicalise? Who did they associate with? And what drove them to plan and execute the worst terror attack in Australia's history? Today, investigative reporter Sean Rubenstein Dunlop on what we know about the shooters and the unresolved questions for our security services. I'm Andy Park. On Gadigal land in Sydney, this is ABC News Daily. Sean, you've long reported on radicalism, terrorism, and national security for the ABC. When you heard about the attack at Bondi Beach on Sunday, what was your first reaction?
My first reaction was that it was our worst fears realised. We've been investigating the re-emergence of the Islamic State network in Australia this year. And I think through our reporting, warning that an attack like this could occur. But to actually see it happening was, of course, absolutely horrifying. And to realise that what we've been being told by our sources about the growing threat was absolutely accurate, was really, really chilling.
These anti-Semitic terrorist attacks will not be successful with their objective, which is to divide us as a nation.
Early indications point to a terrorist attack inspired by Islamic State, allegedly committed by a father and son. There is no evidence to suggest other individuals were involved in this attack. However, we caution that this could change given it is early in our investigation.
I also confirm that the vehicle which is registered to the younger male contained IEDs, but I also confirm that it contained two homemade ISIS flags.
Let's step through what we know about these shooters. We have the father, Sajid Akram. He was licensed to own six firearms. He was shot dead by police in the attack. His son, Naveed Akram, he was the 24-year-old shooter who remains under police guard in hospital in a coma. We know Naveed was first investigated by the Australian spy agency ASIO in 2019. What can you tell me about that investigation?
Yeah, look, not long after the shooting, we discovered that Naveed Akram had come to the attention of ASIO in 2019.
Like the New South Wales Police, one of these individuals was known to us, but not in an immediate threat perspective. So obviously we need to look into what happened here.
It was because of his associations with members of a Sydney-based Islamic State terrorism cell. He was just 17, 18 years old at the time. In mid 2019, police carried out raids to try to disrupt this IS terror cell and try to disrupt plans of a terrorist attack. So ASIO launched an investigation into the associates and connections of people in this terrorism cell. And one of the people they started looking at was Naveed Akram. According to the Prime Minister, who came out and confirmed details about this after our revelations, this investigation started in October 2019 and lasted 6 months.
This person was not on a watch list. He was investigated because of his connections with two people who subsequently, both of whom, went to jail. What ASIO do is they go through and interview anyone who is connected in any way, and they go through, including family members and others.
ASIO interviewed Naveed Akram and his father, Sajid. And according to the Prime Minister, they found no evidence of attack planning or an imminent threat or of terrorism offences being committed. He even said on the 7:30 program there was no evidence of radicalisation for either of the men.
That there was no evidence of this person planning or considering or indeed promoting any act of violence or any act which could be deemed to be anti-Semitic, targeting the Jewish community, which is what occurred.
But I think there will be serious questions asked about that assertion, given Naveed Akram's close associations with several terrorists in that cell, not just his connection to that terrorist Isaac El-Matari, but others, for example, a Sydney man called Yusuf Uainat, who was later convicted of grooming and encouraging young people, juveniles, to try to carry out attacks for Islamic State. He came to our attention again recently after being released from jail for waving a black flag associated with jihadist groups on the Sydney Harbour Bridge during that massive Sydney Harbour Bridge protest against the Gaza war earlier this year. And that, I think, looked to me at the time and certainly in retrospect as a sign of the increasing boldness of this network and their willingness to exploit the anti-Gaza movement, dismay against Israel, and push their jihadist cause.
Sean, you uncovered incredible vision of Naveed Akram street preaching in Bankstown in 2019.
All clear sky. Allah will reward you for whatever actions you do in His cause. Inshallah, this will save you on the day of judgment, when everyone will be asking, where's the hope, where's this? This will come for you on the day of judgment.
What do you think that reveals about the sorts of ideologies that Naveed Akram may have carried in to Sunday's attack?
Well, yeah, we uncovered this video of Naveed Akram preaching on the streets of Sydney, preaching Islam, as a 17-year-old in mid-2019, not long before he came to ASIO's attention. We see him in those videos, or in one of those videos, preaching to teenagers, schoolboys. But the content of those videos, what he says, is not radical in itself. From what I understand and from what Muslim community leaders have stressed to us, those comments in those videos are not radical themselves. But we know that people who were later convicted of terrorism were involved in this street preaching group. We know that these street Dawa groups, as they're called, have been pinpointed in Australia and around the world by counter-terrorism police as avenues for radicalisation and recruitment of young people to terrorism. Now, that's not to say that everyone involved in these street preaching groups is an extremist or terrorist themselves, but they are seen as a recruitment arm for terrorists, so his involvement in this group with known extremists would have been a key cause of concern.
We understand the wash-up of that 2019 investigation was that they no longer remained persons of interest or no longer were on any terrorism watch lists. But you've also been looking into reports that the Akram family took a trip to the Philippines recently. What do we know about that trip?
Senior counterterrorism officials have confirmed to us that Naveed Akram and his father, Sajid, travelled to Manila, the Philippines capital, in early November, so really recently, travelled south. And according to our sources, they have evidence that the father and son participated in military-style training in southern Philippines. They returned to Australia in late November, we're told, not long at all before these attacks. Now, the Philippines has long been known as a hub for extremism, for Islamic State terrorism as well. So this will be a key focus for investigators right now, looking at the international connections of the Akrams.
Sean, I want to get a better understanding of the counter-terrorism systems we have here in Australia. You've done extensive reporting on the radicalisation of young jihadists in Australia. But from your knowledge of ASIO techniques and that sort of landscape of counter-terrorism activity, what does it mean to be known to ASIO? Is that a fixed status? Can you become unknown to ASIO? How does it work?
I think, from my understanding, once you land on ASIO's radar, and they clearly did an assessment and thoroughgoing investigation of this man, of Naveed Akram, and also interviewed his father, you know, you're on their files, you're in their intelligence holdings, and there appears to be knowledge of his continued association post-2019 with extremist figures like Wissam Haddad. So it would be wrong to say that he wasn't known to them after that investigation, as I understand it. But the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has said that these men were not on a watch list in the lead-up to the terrorist attack on Sunday. And also, Sajid Akram, the father, was able to retain his firearms licence despite his son's known associations to these extremists. They were also able to travel to the Philippines, a known hub, as I said, of extremism, certainly in the south of the Philippines. So there are going to be serious questions asked about whether red flags were missed.
In the last few years since the October 7 attacks, ASIO, Australia's chief spy agency, and their budget has increased year on year. Is there any suggestion that ASIO has too much on its plate as it increasingly directs resources to both the threat of the far right as well as keeping across foreign interference concerns? Do you think that ASIO's plate is too full to meet these challenges?
Well, the ASIO Director General, Mike Burgess, in his public comments, has certainly said words to that effect, that their plate is very full, that they are balancing multiple very high priorities.
Australia has never faced so many different threats at scale at once. And these dynamics are putting unprecedented strain on our social fabric.
Fractured community. Terrorism, Islamist terrorism, far-right extremism, other forms of extremism in between, foreign interference and espionage, they have a lot to deal with. We interviewed, as part of our Four Corners investigation earlier this year, a former ASIO agent, an undercover agent codenamed Marcus, who was recruited from the Middle East and infiltrated Australia's Islamic State network in Sydney on behalf of ASIO. He told us that as time passed and as ASIO's attention shifted, his impression was that their interest in Islamist extremism waned, that his warnings weren't appreciated to the same level. You might remember there was an attack last year in which a Sydney bishop was stabbed in Wakeley in a live-streamed church service by a teenage boy. Marcus, the former ASIO agent, said he had been warning since about 2 years earlier that extremists were calling for a violent attack on the bishop. He believes that ASIO dropped the ball.
Multiple times I showed them messages on my phone. I used to send them screenshots as well with contacts of people who...
At that time, prior to the attack and when the attack happened, ASIO had lowered the terrorism threat level from probable to possible after multiple terrorist attacks last year. They raised the threat level again to probable. So I think these are questions that are going to be raked over very thoroughly in the coming months and possibly years in the wake of this attack, as questions are asked about whether red flags might have been missed or not.
You know, since the October 7 attack, clearly there has been concern in the Jewish community about anti-Semitic acts of violence. Have the organs of national security in this country met that challenge? Have they witnessed that trend in their investigations and perhaps even convictions?
Obviously, as we know, the Jewish community has been warning for quite some time now that they believed they were at a very heightened risk of just this sort of thing happening. We know that our counterterrorism authorities, ASIO, the Australian Federal Police, state police forces like the New South Wales Police here in Sydney, have been extremely concerned about the severe uptick in anti-Semitism that they've been measuring, that we've all witnessed play out. I know from my conversations with current and former counter-terrorism investigators that they see that as a key threat indicator of potential attacks, given the role that anti-Semitism plays both in jihadist terrorism and far-right extremism.
I think what most people, certainly in Sydney and across Australia, want to know right now, given your unique understanding of the counter-terrorism landscape in Australia, is that we're safe and that particularly Jewish Australians are safe. What do you think about that?
Our counterterrorism sources have told us that they believe there's no active threat right now, that they neutralised that. But as I said, they'll be frantically looking at these men's associates and at the network of Australian Islamic State terrorists and supporters to assess whether there are other attack plans afoot. I think there are clearly very serious and relevant questions right now about whether counterterrorism authorities dropped the ball on Naveed and Sajid Akram.
Sean Rubenstein Dunlop is an investigative reporter focusing on extremism and national security. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed, audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Andy Park. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.